This is How I Built My Audience with Blake Immel.
Hello, I'm Blake, and today on the show, we'll be getting free consulting from Matthew Kobach. Matt is the director of content marketing at Fast. He's also got a massive following on Twitter. He has over 100,000 followers there, which he started growing just to prove to himself that he could. Here are three things that you're going to learn in this one. First, moments that have completely blown Matt away in his life. Second, should you focus on quantity or quality of content? And third, how to inject personality into a branded social media account. Enough recap, let's roll the interview. We are going to dive into Twitter, maybe a little Clubhouse, whatever else we want to chat about. Just a friendly conversation here that is going on the record here. But I'm really excited for this one. I think everybody else is too. So I'm going to start out with this. First and foremost, I think everybody listening to this right now is going to want to know, have you ever actually met Dom in person?
Yeah, a bunch.
You have?
I've met him a couple of times. Some of my travels, so for those of you who don't know, I've been driving around the United States for the past 5 or 6 months and living in a different city for about a month at a time. And I got out to the West Coast and so I was able to meet him in person. And so, yeah, it was great. It was fun to meet him.
Is the Australian accent just totally fake? Is he actually just American?
He's fake. He is as Australian as they come. I had some Aussie friends before I started working at Fast, and they took me out to hang out with their Aussie friends and go out in New York City. This is when I was living there. And he very much reminds me of every Aussie person I've ever met, which is a good thing. It's a very fun group to always hang out with.
Awesome. We'll dive a little bit into the Fast stuff because I know that everybody's going to want to know a little bit about that. But we'll try to get into some things that maybe you don't get to talk about as much that are still related to the things that you talk about all the time and are probably bored with still. First off, congrats on 100K followers. That must feel pretty surreal to hit 100K followers when, you know, you're just some dude. not in a bad way, but we're all just like some person.
Yeah, and it's everyone's just some dude. Like, that's all it really is. No, it's absolutely surreal. It's at times. It's funny. It's like it's half very believable to me and half very unbelievable. And the unbelievable is exactly what you think it would. It's what you said. It's like, you know, why would 100,000 people just follow some dude? But the part that's believable to me is once you start getting into that world, especially in the world of creators, entrepreneurs, builders, like that kind of stuff, you realize that so many of them are successful just because they took the step to start. Okay. So it's funny, it makes achieving things that seem completely out of reach very achievable. So like that part doesn't feel that surprising. I don't think there's anything special or remarkable about me. That's the surprising part. But the unsurprising part is that I think anyone who doesn't find themselves particularly remarkable could do something similar.
Is the 100K followers on Twitter the most surreal thing you've felt in a while? Or is there anything else that blows you away even more recently in your life?
The working at the NYSE, that was tough to beat because I know the exact moment where that felt really surreal, where it really hit me. Actually, there's a couple moments. But one of them was, I remember thinking to myself, I'm getting ready to interview Shaq again. And that was never on my radar. I was never wanted to be a journalist. I never wanted to do any of that stuff. I never cared about finance. So to be someone who interviews celebrities or athletes or CEOs on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, that was just never, that was never a goal. It was never on my roadmap. It wasn't anything like that. So that was certainly surreal. And also that first moment of putting on a suit, walking down Wall Street and then walking right into the New York Stock Exchange, that was also unbelievably surreal because, again, never cared about finance. You can see me right now. I'm in a hoodie. This is more what I wore. The suit was an abnormality. Like that wasn't what I normally dressed as. I had to buy a bunch of suits for that job. And being what seemed like a stereotypical Wall Street scene in my life, that was just never in the cards.
Man, I want to dive into the New York Stock Exchange stuff, especially branded social. That's really interesting to me and to a lot of people here. But before we dive too much into that, I do just briefly want to touch on your own audience. So you just cracked 100K. At some point, you had to have started at zero. Your pinned tweet, it talks about how you just started building almost 2 years ago now, I guess. We're at that point. But you just basically wanted to see if you could do it from scratch for yourself because you'd done it for a powerful brand before. But you wanted to do it for yourself. Did you actually have any idea, like any sort of niche in mind, or were you just throwing spaghetti against the wall?
So it was a little bit. It took me a little bit to find my niche or to find my voice. When I first started, I was testing different things maybe in March and April of 2019. And it wasn't until about May that I really honed in on what it was. And what it was just pulling back the curtain of what social media marketing is and what it means to come up with creative ideas and to like explain what some of these words that get used over and over in the industry really mean. Because I come from an academic background, which you always have to be very careful about the words you use, and you got to be careful to define them so that everyone's talking about the same agreed upon thing. And what I noticed in social media was that there were these buzzwords that were going around that had been around for 10 years, and they were just used so much that they just became meaningless. And so I just came in and said, these words mean, if you can't define it, this word means nothing. And if someone's using this word and they can't define it, don't trust them. And here's how I define this word, and here's how I define success, and here's what I found that works. And I think it was the perfect timing for that kind of content to come in, because I don't think people were really doing that. Or if they were, I hadn't seen it. When I started, you had people still using those buzzwords, and it just doesn't really help anyone accomplish anything. Like a good example is be authentic. If you just tell someone, yeah, go on social media, you got to be authentic, I don't really know what to do with that information.
Add value. What does that mean?
Be social. Like these things just don't really like make, and they probably started in a good place. They probably started with in a deck or a PowerPoint that explained what it meant. And that was the summary. And then that's the stuff that got repeated over and over. And then it gets repeated over and over by charlatans. So now it becomes like something that isn't necessarily even true anymore, because people that are selling snake oil start using it. So I just wanted to be very careful about defining what these terms meant and like what real success is, and really just be straightforward. And I think I ended up taking some of the air out of those people who perhaps were stealing some of those phrases or co-opting some of those phrases without any real world experience to back it up.
I'm curious what your take is, because people like Pomp will talk about being prolific quantity creators. Were you more of the mindset of I'm going to create as much content as possible to see what works, or were you more on the quality side? I'm going to post fewer things but make sure that they're great.
Yeah, the problem is it's hard to figure out what's great until you do a bunch of stuff. So it's not necessarily quality over quantity or vice versa. To me, it was quantity gets to quality. Mm-hmm. So I can write a really tight tweet right now. It could be punchy. It can be short. It can get right to the point. But that's only because I put in the reps for, I've been doing this for 10 years now, over 10 years now. And that's muscle memory now. It's something I'm good at. But I wouldn't have known what a high quality tweet was without doing all the quantity first. I think you've got two perspectives, and marketing actually works in the same way. It's funny, is like what works for one company in marketing doesn't work for another company in marketing, especially if you're talking about size. Like a startup has to have different strategies than a established brand. Mm-hmm. Much if you are starting your social media following, you have to have a different strategy than if you have a big one and you're, you know, continuing to grow it. It's like this like 0 to 1 element of it, and then this 1 to infinity, and they're equally as hard. And so when you're at that 0 to 1, you need to create a lot of content or to put out a lot of stuff and go for that quantity just to figure out what is good and what isn't good. And your audience will tell you, you'll be able to tell yourself, like you can tell sometimes when something's good and when something's not good. And then once you get over that 0 to 1 hump, that's when you can then start focusing more on quality, and you don't have to just spray and pray, for lack of a better term.
Sure. Right now, with all the experience that you've got now, being at 100K, feeling pretty good, you can write a tight tweet. When you look back at young Padawan Kobach a few years ago, what stupid things do you wish that you just, or would you just not do that you did back then?
You mean in my life or on Twitter?
On Twitter specifically, on but Twitter. If you do want to give life advice, oh, no. Sure.
I've got plenty of things I would do differently in life. But your question's about Twitter. The stuff I would do differently on Twitter is I just would have done it sooner. That's really the only thing is I didn't start doing this in 2019. And I feel like I missed out on 5 or 10 years of opportunity where I could have been having these thoughts. But I'm also kind of just the way I live my life is I don't really look back on doing something different because it's hard to say that it's easy to take me right now and put me back 5 years and I would kill it. Take me and put me back in like a freshman year in high school. I'm going to be the smartest kid in high school. I was a popular kid. That's easy to do. But you also have to take all the insecurities you had back then and the gangly features and all that. And that's how I feel then too. Is I don't know if my thinking was as clear back in 2014. I don't know if my writing was as clear. So I don't know that I would have even been remotely as successful. It took me getting here and leveraging at the time that I did that led to having any kind of success.
Percentage wise, when you look back at your time with New York Stock Exchange, because you were still doing Twitter for a decent amount of time before you left NYSE. So you had started while you were there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So percentage wise, that compared to Fast, are you growing more rapidly at Fast now or just with your personal account with being at Fast or being at New York Stock Exchange?
Are you asking, is my personal account going faster now that I'm at Fast than at New York Stock? Yes, certainly at Fast. And I think that is the difference between working for a $50 billion company versus a startup. And again, it goes back to that 0 to 1 concept and 1 to infinity. But for the New York Stock Exchange, they're well past one, you know, like they're on infinity. Mm-hmm. And when you become a company that size, you worry about messing up. Like that's like risks are more risky the bigger you are because you have more to lose. When you are a startup, risks are less risky. And this is a really long way of saying my company wasn't as wild about me tweeting when I worked at the risk-averse company than the company where we need to take some risks in order to get to that 0 to 1, get over that 0 to 1 hump. So I definitely felt I was let go and I was able to do more things. I'm able to say things I otherwise wouldn't have said. And I took a few chances when I was at the New York Stock Exchange, but now I don't worry about a boss coming and asking me, what's this tweet mean? Where at the New York Stock Exchange, I certainly had that kind of hovering over my shoulder.
Sure. Let's shift into branded Twitter accounts and branded social in general, because you've probably got more experience than just Twitter in that realm. But you mentioned a lot of the differences, especially with size and just whether it's a more conservative company. Usually the bigger ones have to be more risk averse. If there are builders out there listening to this right now that have a small company, a startup, something they're building, and they need a branded Twitter, a branded social account behind it. But they feel like they have really boring content right now because most social is actually fairly boring. What advice would you give, or how have you managed to inject life and personality into the Fast Twitter account? What are some lessons that people could just replicate from that?
So I think if you are a founder and you want to leverage social media, you're going to have to either have to be all in or all out. You see so many companies that like want their cake and eat it too. They're like, we want to be super popular. We want to have this audience, but we don't want to say anything that is too, I don't even want to say controversial, but even too interesting. And so if your mentality is you're going to go and you're going to essentially tweet press releases and you're going to give maybe generic product or business updates, I wouldn't even waste your time. Your time as a founder is spent in such better areas if you're not going to fully commit. Now, if you are going to fully commit, and it's not right for every company, like every company has to make decisions based on one, who they can hire, what their market is, what their funding is and all that stuff. But if you are going to commit, fully commit, hire someone who knows what they're doing, hire someone who has experience, or if you don't have the funds to hire someone who has experience, hire someone who has proven that they can create interesting content, and you have to trust them. You can't clip their wings. I've actually learned this firsthand in working with creators. I've seen like beautiful videos that these people do. And then I tap them to create something for Fast. And then I give them like, all right, just meet these three criteria. And I realized I totally clipped their wings. And now their creativity, I've killed it. Their creativity is gone. You can feel it in the video. And so what I've learned is I now just get out of the way. I go, yeah, here's our brand. We love what you do. Just get this product in here or do something like, can you do what you do with this one little piece right here? And if they go yes and they're excited about it, then I go with it. I know this is very non-actionable advice, but the best thing you can do if you're young is you've got to, or if you're a young company, it's the same idea. You have nothing to lose on social. Take some chances. Like, you have to give people a reason to follow. You have to be interesting. You have to do something that's going to be slightly different. Take that ethos that made you start that. Like, you started a company for a reason. You saw a gap. You saw something, a problem that needed to be fixed. Now, and you had the gusto to go do it. So take that same gusto and apply it now to social media or apply it to marketing. And if you don't, obviously you probably don't have time. So if you hire someone to do it, empower them with that same gusto. Let them know that you're thinking big, that you're, that it's okay to take chances, and make it so that they have to present ideas to you that you say no to. It's something I'm still struggling with. I have my old New York Stock Exchange kind of voices in my head, and I have yet to go to Dom with an idea that was too big, or for him to say that, no, that idea is too big. So I still don't think I'm thinking big enough in terms of all this. And we've got some really exciting big things planned for 2021 that I can't wait to launch. And like, we're thinking big, and I'm just going to keep going bigger and bigger until I get told no.
You've probably had experience talking to tons of social media managers or people that freelance doing that kind of stuff or branded accounts. Are there any questions that come to mind that give you a good idea if somebody actually knows what they're doing in terms of running a social account?
Yeah, it's if they don't use those buzzwords. If they use the buzzword and can define it, then I'm okay with it. If they just are giving kind of generic advice on this, it's the difference between the people who you can tell have been like in the weeds and their hands are dirty. Those people know what you can tell what those people know what they're talking about. It's the people that kind of coach from the sidelines and have never played that use the language that just doesn't really resonate.
Yeah. Shifting a little bit from your own audience to who you follow a little bit. Who is one person on Twitter that you could just never possibly imagine unfollowing?
Oh, there's a bunch. The account I think that brings me the most joy is Orange Book. I believe it's Orange Book, one word, and maybe underscore at the end. It's a pseudonymous account. They don't have their name. You don't know who it is. And it's a type of content. It's this philosophical content. And if you look at what I post, I tend to do the same thing, and I perhaps look at marketing and content through this philosophical or human nature lens, because that's just what interests me. I think another reason for the success of my Twitter handle was I was able to take this topic that people were interested in, so that's the marketing and content, social media, but I was able to put this lens over it of leading a happy life and leading a productive life and how to get the most out of life, because that's just happens to be things I'm interested in. I got bit by that bug in college and it never went away. And it wasn't until you asked earlier, like, when did you find your niche? It was then. It was when I realized, when I started adding my own interests or looking at these topics through my own interests, that's when it really took off. And it was because it was a lot easier to do. If you're writing about something that interests you, it's easy. Like, my Twitter account takes no work. It literally takes zero work. I would pay to do it. That's how much I enjoy doing it. If someone goes, hey, if you want to keep your Twitter account, it's going to cost you $100 a month, I'd go, sure, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And so that's...
If right now, Twitter, so let's do the flip of that. So Twitter mm-hmm. comes to you and says, hey, you got to pay for it now. You'd be like, sure, okay. But if Twitter came to you right now and said, hey, we're deleting your account entirely and you got to start from scratch, would you just keep going, or would you 100%. Hesitate at any moment
no.
to get started again?
You delete them all. I get banned and I start Cat Moback and I get going. Like, it's because the followers, the retweets and stuff is a bonus to why I'm on there and how I use it. The reason is conversations like this. The reason is connecting with people. The reason is able to think about things that I wouldn't have otherwise thought about. That's why I brought up Orange Book, is that they think about things in the way I wish I thought about them, or that I like to think about things. And so I get as much value out of that as I do tweeting. My Twitter's almost like a diary or a journal of some sort. And I get that same value, whether it's 100,000 people or whether it's one person.
Sure. I do want to talk a little bit about Clubhouse here. There's a lot of exciting stuff happening with Twitter. They're like opening spaces. They acquired Revue today. So maybe people are talking already about paid feeds. And I'm guessing that a year from now, Twitter is going to have some decent features added on that aren't existing currently. And I'm excited to see what happens. But that Clubhouse is just, there's just huge culture right now on Twitter of, are you on Clubhouse? Clubhouse is the best. And then there's the other side where I don't get Clubhouse. There's definitely people from all walks of life and opinions on this. But if I'm a small account and I get an invite to Clubhouse and I'm going into it with basically no followers, no connections, no clue how to use it, how would you actually recommend using that platform? Because I've seen a lot of people just like jumping right in that have big accounts and having fun. And I was on a Clubhouse with you yesterday. I was just listening in. It's super fun, but I'm just curious, what if I have nothing? How do I actually use Clubhouse?
So I'm new to this too. And I think everyone's a little new to it. And I don't know that I've seen a lot of brands do it. Spoiler alert. I am actually going to host a Clubhouse tomorrow with Dom to talk about Fast. So I'm dipping my toe into what this means for brands to use. So I might have a better answer tomorrow after, I think we're doing it at 5:30 Pacific time. But what I would do here, I'll just tell you what I did. I didn't know what I was doing. So I found people that were in room. I went to rooms. And when someone invited me on stage, I accepted and I just started talking. And you realize that it was really just a way to have an interesting conversation. And I've since then, I might be more deliberate about it and have essentially the same conversation we're having right now, just doing it on Clubhouse. I think that's the best way to do anything is just to jump in and do it. And what you find, especially with Clubhouse, like logically, you can tell yourself, no one knows what they're doing here because this technology is so new. So just jump in and you're going to be closer to figuring out as everyone else is. Something that's a little more established might be a little harder to take that first leap. But something like this, you've just got to go in and learn it and figure it out. And that's the best way to have an advantage over everyone else. The sooner you do it, the sooner you have that advantage.
For sure. I want to finish things off. I'll give you a chance to chat about what you're working on at Fast as well. My last question really is just around your Twitter funnel, circling a little bit back to this, because most Twitter consultants they'll sell their Gumroad course. And then in there, it'll say, you've got to have an end-to-end funnel where you've got the awareness people coming in. And then the link in your bio is so crucial. And then you go on to Matthew Kobach's Twitter and it's your Instagram. So I'm curious what the reasoning is, what the reasoning is behind that. First of all, if you actually care about that whole funnel, if it works, if your Instagram's performing for you, or if you just don't care, you really are just here for the purpose of the relationships.
Yeah. So the biggest difference is I'm just not selling anything. Like I've got a job that pays the bills. So I don't need to redirect anyone anywhere to anything else. So that's the biggest difference. But the reason I put my Instagram on there is just to diversify. You know, I understand that I'm building a castle in the sand. And at any point, Twitter could delete me. Twitter could fall apart. Twitter could decide that they don't want to show my tweets to people anymore. And so if I want to like have an audience that like-minded people that talk about the same things, I at least have some of them now on Instagram. And I don't use my Instagram in the same way, but that's because I have Twitter as that outlet. If that Twitter as an outlet got shut down, then I would probably start using Instagram in the same way that I use Twitter, at least a similar way.
Why not? Why no email list or a newsletter or anything to do the same thing?
I don't have the time to write emails. This is honest to God truth. It started on Twitter because I had to pick my focus somewhere. I had to just point in a direction. Twitter was just the direction that I chose. It could have been emails. It could have been the Substack. It could have been anything. And now that I'm at the point where Twitter's not hard, like we said this either, it's muscle memory at this point, so it's really easy to do. Had I been writing newsletters for 2 years now, I could probably pump out a newsletter really easily. I just have other things that I'm interested in and that take up my time. So to add something like that onto my plate feels a little overwhelming at the moment. I wouldn't say no to doing in the future, and maybe I start regular Clubhouses, maybe I start a Substack, maybe I write a book or start a Gumroad project. There's plenty of different things I could do, and it's figuring out, like, I can't do all of them. If I try to do all of them, I'll do none of them. It's figuring out, like, all right, what's the next thing that I could do that I'd want to spend the next 6 months or whatever it is working on and really honing in that ability.
Awesome. I'm not going to keep you too much longer. We're about at our time here. So I want to give you a chance to promote where people can find you, what you're working on with FAST, and anything else that you want to talk about right here. The stage is yours.
Yeah, I'm easy enough. I'm Kobach on anything. FAST is, I don't really have a pitch for FAST other than my, it's a product that sells itself. I like it. Like I joined FAST because I believe in the product. But the best reason to follow FAST is that I have the space to explore what marketing means in 2021 and that we can take some chances. So if you want to see a company that might have really good marketing and really bad marketing, we're going to experiment. And I'm not afraid to try the stuff where we might fall flat on our face. A good example is today. We announced our Series B funding. And most companies, when they do this, especially when you have not necessarily the funding, but something of the similar tone, you do a press release and maybe you talk to some media outlets and they do a story and you just tweet the links out to that. We did a video with our founder where he essentially just read the press release, but he did it in his own energy, his own personality. So it brought it to life more. I didn't tweet a link to the press release. I summarized it into a tweet storm. So we're trying these different ways to communicate with either investors or clients or people looking for jobs in a way that feels native to the platform we're posting it on. If something requires a video, we want to do a video for it. If we think it's good in a tweet storm with some softer language, we're going to do that. And if it's something where the language has to be buttoned up because it's a press release, we'll do that too. We're not going to take these round objects and put them in square holes. We're going to figure out what shape the hole is and then take our content and manipulate it so it fits into the hole. And I think that's exciting. I don't think many companies do that yet. I think they're scared or don't even know where to begin, but I'm willing to risk Series B funding video that people don't like just to try something different and try to use the same language as the platform we're posting on.
Definitely. You're doing it better than anybody out there and couldn't be talking to a nicer guy. So I really appreciate you coming on here. It was super cool to talk to you, and hopefully we can get you back on maybe in a year or so. Talk about all the new things Twitter's doing and how Clubhouse has evolved.
Yeah, I hope so. Twitter needs to make some moves. I love Twitter. I am such a fan, but it is essentially unchanged for 10 years now.
Yeah, for sure.
Hopefully they do some things.
I think moves are coming. So we'll have to chat. But thanks again, Matthew, for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to How I Built My Audience. If you found something noteworthy or interesting in this episode, remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And hey, share it with a friend.